Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher, current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And so on this podcast, I share ideas and strategies, practical things that work for me, but also those epic fails I've made along the way. All because I believe teachers play a profound role in helping students reach their creative potential. And that's what students will need as they navigate an unpredictable world. We are in the midst of a summer series I'm calling Low Tech Learning. And I've had a few people ask me about LA Unified School District's new restrictive policy. I'm actually going to be covering that next week, so check out my podcast next week. You will see it there, both as an article and as a podcast episode. And if you have not signed up for my newsletter, just go to spencereducation.com. At the very bottom, there's a space to sign up for my newsletter. And that's where you will find all of my latest information, practical resources, links to podcasts and articles and things like that. Also, if you want shorter content, obviously this is much longer content. If you want shorter content, check out my TikTok, my Facebook, and my Instagram. Facebook less so, but more my Instagram and my TikTok, where I make these short little videos that you can check out. And all of those are found at Spencer Education. So TikTok, at Spencer Education, same thing with Instagram, same thing with Facebook. And then of course, spencereducation.com is my website. Without further ado, let's dive into this week's topic, which is all about when personalized learning works better than adaptive learning. I'm gonna start with the story of going to the library with my students. 8 students stood in line whispering to one another and fidgeting in excitement. A few of them had peeked into the windows to see what was new. One girl had a tiny notebook with a list. Most of the students had pulled out their phones to check key information. There was a buzz in the air that settled into an intense, quiet excitement. But this wasn't a concert or a line to buy a smartphone or the front gate of a sporting event. This was our first assigned library day of the school year. Being new to this particular school, I wasn't sure what to expect. I had heard that this place kept reading fun, and the library was the epicenter of this idea of fun reading experiences. And if you're imagining a school that's, you know, an elite private school, we were a Title I low-income public school. I want to be very clear about it. So I'm standing there baffled by what I'm seeing. A boy walked up to me and asked, "What are you going to get?" "Oh, I already have a book I'm reading," I answered. He shook his head and said, "Nah, Spencer, you're going to get something. Everyone leaves with at least 2 books, but not more than 4. "Is that a rule?" I asked. He laughed at the ridiculousness of the question. The rule, it was like making a rule that you have to eat at a buffet. It wasn't a rule, it's just how things were done here. Right then, the librarian opened the door and the students streamed in quietly because it's a library. Just kidding, they streamed in loudly. They scurried from display to display, reading the back covers and debating which books would work best. And our librarian seemed to embrace the noise as she called out specific books and named specific kids. "Carlos, you'll love this one," she yelled from across the library. Some of the students had been checking out books all summer, but she had built up release dates for the first week of school. The cynical side of me would have scoffed at middle school students getting this excited about books. After all, this is a cultural perception in our society that reading is inherently uncool. As a child of the 1980s, I always felt like those read posters, you know, the ones with like Mr. T or Michael J. Fox or Screech, and the word read in all caps kind of backfired. It was like the ad council was trying too hard with his advertising, trying to make something that should be inherently cool look cool. And the fact that they were trying sort of sent the message that maybe reading wasn't all that cool. But any cynicism I had felt began to melt as I watched the sincerity of my students. They were pulling out their phones and reading QR codes to get book reviews. They debated the merits of various series and on occasion mocked other students for their choices, something I would have to address in our first whole class meeting. The library was like a candy store for the mind, and my students were excited to be there. At one point, the librarian called students to an open space and reminded them of some of the strategies for finding the right book. She talked about reading sample pages, checking out the synopsis on the back of the book, looking for 3-star reviews, which are often more honest than 4-star reviews on Amazon, and even looking at the book covers to see who they were marketed toward. I know we're taught to not judge a book by the cover, but she was basically saying, to judge the book by this cover. This library experience defied the stereotypes of the stodgy, quiet library. But I'd argue that many school libraries have a similar environment because librarians as a whole are finding innovative ways to get kids excited about reading. Looking back at it, our school librarian was the leader of an empowered community. She was a true expert in reading and curation and media literacy, library science, all of that. But she never presented herself as the sole expert or gatekeeper in reading. Instead, she built relationships with students and worked with them to find texts that they would connect to their interests. As a true curator, she read a broad variety of books and constantly explored new authors and genres with the hopes of helping students fall in love with reading. She was also the master architect who designed systems that would empower readers. She launched a buddy reader program where 8th graders would read to 1st graders. She coordinated author visits and worked with teams of students to do book talks and book preview videos. In other words, she helped design an ecosystem of reading that would allow me as the teacher to build a classroom culture of empowered readers. This moment was a reminder of the power of authentic, personalized learning. Now, what do we mean by personalized learning? I'm going to share this other story related to reading. Here's the booklet. It tells you exactly what to do to help students get into the reading intervention software. Everything should stay inside the program. It's cloud-based, but everything has been downloaded, meaning they really can't go onto the internet if they tried, the district representative explained to me. What do? I asked. Walk around and monitor. If they have any questions, they'll raise their hands, he explained. But what about the discussions? No, it's personalized. There are no discussions, he said. No lit circles, I asked. No, it's fully individualized. They do targeted skill practice based on a pretest. This is state-of-the-art adaptive learning. That means they'll get vocabulary practice and reading intervention work that targets their key deficiencies. You don't have to do any assessment. I mean, yes, once a week you'll do the printout and you'll show them their goals, but it's driven by the adaptive learning software. They don't even have to make their own goals. You'll get data on how they mastered every standard. You'll get fluency scores. And as they move up to higher reading levels, they'll get badges. And what do? I ask again. Just monitor, he says. It's honestly the easiest class you'll teach. This is the future of reading intervention. Personalized learning is finally a reality. As I implemented the program, I couldn't help but feel that personalized was the wrong word. If anything, it felt impersonal. Students sat at computers doing digital worksheets meant to teach everything from phonics and blending to reading comprehension. They wore headphones as I walked around from rows to rows to keep them on track. This was the first glimpse of adaptive learning fueled by AI. And no, it was not generative AI. It was a different form of AI. A series of cryptic algorithms set the tone and pace of the learning, and all I had to do was sit back and watch. 3 weeks later, I approached my principal with a new idea. After nearly a semester of this adaptive learning program with the previous teacher and now myself, students weren't reaching their goals. They were bored, they were frustrated. So I pitched something different. We would head out to the library and choose books. Students would read silently each day and build up reading endurance. We would use recommendations from algorithms, but also lean heavily on our amazing librarian. We would form lit circles and do shared read alouds, but we would also do 5 minutes of adaptive learning fluency work. We wouldn't avoid AI, but we wouldn't let the machines drive the learning. Instead, our focus would remain on the human connection. Now, 4 weeks later, we compared this blended approach to the adaptive learning program. And it turned out our students had higher reading scores than the district average for those in reading intervention. By focusing on motivation and building up reading endurance, students improved. By engaging in meaningful discussions centered on critical thinking, students improved on their overall comprehension and critical thinking, which turned out to be important for the test. I would never claim that adaptive learning programs don't work, nor would I claim that my experience is normative. But I do find it fascinating that we are starting to see the cracks in the promises of adaptive learning. The data seems mixed. For certain phonics-based discrete skills, adaptive learning works really well. But for actual reading comprehension and deeper skill development and things like reading endurance, well, these programs fail. But for me, this story is a bigger reminder that personalized learning has to begin with the person. It has to focus on voice and choice. It needs to include this human element. And while technology is great on the back end, it often works best when the student-facing side is a bit more, I guess, low-tech. Personalized learning or adaptive learning? I think it's important to recognize that there is a difference between adaptive learning and personalized learning. Personalized learning is human-driven. Adaptive learning is algorithm-driven. The learning tasks in personalized learning are authentic. There's real problem-solving and opportunities to do creative work. Whereas in adaptive learning, it's not authentic. It's programmed. Students don't have any opportunity to connect to the world or solve real problems. The grouping in personalized learning is collaborative, even if it has an individual and interdependent element. But the grouping in adaptive learning is fully individualized. They are by themselves. The assessment is messy, it's varied, and it often includes peer and self-assessment in personalized learning. But the assessment is singular when it comes to adaptive learning, and it's entirely standardized and often opaque. Students have no idea when the assessment is actually even happening. The process, which I've alluded to with personalized learning, is messy. The process with adaptive learning, by contrast, is efficient. The role of the learner is empowering with personalized learning, but it's more engaging and efficiently engaging in adaptive learning. The role of the teacher is one of an active facilitator during personalized learning, and you're kind of the master planner of the personalized learning experiences, whereas the role of the teacher for adaptive learning is that of a manager. Now, there's nothing inherently wrong with adaptive learning programs. Some of them are really great with certain skills. But I think it's important that we recognize that there are limitations. I've seen the promises that AI will provide perfect personalized learning. And in fact, to the extent that we won't even need teachers, I've heard this over and over again. I've heard that it will fix the learning gap, that it will change learning forever. Newsflash, it will not. I'm already seeing bold promises of using generative AI for even better, more targeted learning. But again, I don't buy it. And the reason why is that this mindset misunderstands what learning is all about. For the last 3 decades, I've watched as edtech evangelists have promised that the newest cutting-edge technology will bring about a renaissance in learning and revolutionize education. better achievement, better engagement. You get the idea. I heard this with the advent of the internet. Hop on the information highway, ask Jeeves, he'll know what to do. Then it was specialized CD-ROMs. Then it was one-to-one devices and tablets. And eventually the adaptive learning programs that I just described. And now it's AI tutoring systems. The truth is, we are getting better at delivering content. We're getting better at assessing student learning in an efficient way. And these technology tools can finally adapt to both the delivery and assessment. The EdTech evangelists aren't wrong about the power of AI to deliver instruction in a dynamic way. They often miss things like bias and misinformation, but that's a whole different thing. The core idea isn't entirely wrong. And yet, this EdTech philosophy is built on a content delivery model that essentially treats students as passive recipients of knowledge. It's an overly simplified view of the mind as this like information processing machine. With the right engineering, we can match the instruction perfectly and efficiently to each student in an individualized way. But again, if you've listened to this podcast, this is the creative classroom. And that adaptive learning approach completely lacks creativity. And more importantly, that's not how our brains work. Memory is much more fluid than a machine. We experience more interference based on prior knowledge, and our current understandings, they're fluid. They change by the moment. The neural pruning process is deeply physical, connecting to factors like sleep and food and social interaction, which is why we can remember something on one day, but not the other day. But I also think that this model fails to grasp how we actually learn. We are not passive recipients of knowledge. We actively construct our knowledge from infancy. We are learners before we ever go to school. When we use a content delivery model, we rob students of their agency, and the net result is a lack of self-direction. When we give them instant feedback at all times, they fail to develop things like resilience due to the lack of productive struggle. I also think it's important to recognize that learning is inherently social. We develop deeper understanding through collaborative learning and peer assessment. And when we place students in front of a screen for hours in isolation, they fail to understand the nuanced perspectives or gain feedback that can help them develop deeper understanding and intellectual humility. In other words, in an age of generative AI, students need to develop the depth advantage that they'll need in an unpredictable world. And these human skills require human interaction. So does that mean we don't use tech at all? Well, actually, we can use AI on the back end. 2 years ago, I created this continuum of rejecting generative AI to embracing generative AI. So we have AI resistant to AI assisted to AI integrated to AI driven. And I think part of what we can go for here is AI assisted. So no student use it on the front end, but on the back end, teachers can use it to create instructional materials. And it can be really powerful in helping us analyze data and helping us generate new material and then personalize those to our students based upon what we know about them. I think it's really important that we provide what's called a raft. That comes from Project Chris. It's not my own idea. I modified it a little bit myself, and I connected to something called the Facts Cycle. You can check it out on my website. But this is the idea of making sure that we spell out in our prompt engineering the role, the audience, the format, and then I would say the tone rather than topic. And then we take what it creates, which is often vanilla, it's often boring, and we modify it based upon what we know about our students. We modify it based upon our own voice, and we can then use that modified version of what AI created to design something that our students can use. So we could use a choice menu where they choose the learning targets, they pick up the resources based upon what they have not mastered, And then they choose the finished product. We can also design personalized learning systems in terms of projects that are built on student voice and choice. We can do mini projects. We can do inquiry-based activities like a Wonder Day project. And again, even though these tend to be low tech, we can still incorporate some technology. Kids can be doing research. They can be connecting to experts online. But we could also have them asking questions to chatbots. So as we think about this idea of low-tech learning, it doesn't mean we completely abandon the technology. It's just that we're using tech to amplify the learning rather than replace it. It's that we're choosing the human element first and then connecting the technology as a result. In the end, what will help students improve both in their academic outcomes, but also in those skills that they'll need to navigate the world, what they'll need are those deeper learning competencies. They'll need resilience, collaboration, creativity, problem solving. They'll need to learn how to focus. They're going to need to learn how to engage in deep problem solving and mastery. And that requires something deeply human. That requires something personalized, not merely adaptive. And I think a lot of schools have embraced this idea of just putting kids in front of things like iReady for hours on end. And I think a lot of people are beginning to ask, what is the effect of this? Is it actually improving the academic learning outcomes? And also, is it leading to the deeper learning competencies that they need for the rest of their lives? And I would argue a personalized learning approach, whether it's a choice menu, a project, a Wonder Day activity, those elements that are personalized rather than adaptive will help students get there. Hey, thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Would you do me a favor if you enjoy this podcast? I just said podcast a lot in one sentence or two. But if you enjoy it, would you leave a review on Apple Podcasts? I use the word podcast again. Look at it. Or Spotify or wherever it is that you get your, oh my gosh, yes, podcast. So would you leave a review? Subscribe to it if you haven't yet. Also tell a neighbor, a friend, a stranger, a frenemy, whoever it may be about this. Oh my gosh, I'm going to say the word again, podcast. And so yeah. Like, subscribe, tell a friend about it. Any of those things would be great. And again, check out my newsletter. It is at spencereducation.com. Thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day and go out and make something awesome.